Yep. There it is. There it is.
Oh, hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we make today make sense. Yes, we do. Yes.
We do.
We do.
And if we can't, we try really hard. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for coming on or being with us or whatever. It is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday day. The deal is, of course, you send your questions. We give you some answers and make y'all smarter and also us too smarter in the process. That's the way this works
exactly.
On a Wednesday.
Exactly.
So here we are.
Yeah, it's circular, guys. It's a circular economy
yes.
that we're doing here. And today we are going to start with a question about April's job report. Take it away.
Hi, Molly and Kai. This is Julia from California. Can you make me smart about how the jobs numbers are calculated? While I find it to be deeply upsetting that 100% of jobs would have gone to men, I find it hard to believe that zero women were hired into new jobs. Can you help me understand? Thank you.
Totally fair question, and I was not clear last Friday when I said men got all the new jobs. What I meant was, and again, my bad, men got all the net new jobs. That's not to say no women were hired, right? You hired 266,000 people in an economy. Some portion of them are going to be women. But the catch is that 64,000 women either stopped looking for work or left the workforce entirely. 64,000. So that brings the total of net new jobs for women to zippo, bupkis, squat, zero for the month of April.
Right.
And it's concerning because it's echoes of December and January when, as you remember, almost 400,000 women left the workforce because of, as we've talked about a zillion times, childcare issues and parenting and all of that stuff that is falling disproportionately on women. So I apologize for the lack of clarity. Women were hired, but on net, all the jobs went to men. Now,
exactly.
As to how
women lost jobs and got them
right.
is what we mean.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you for that. That's a good clarification. On how it's calculated, it is there are a rolling set of surveys, there are two surveys. One's called the Household Survey, where people at the Bureau of Labor Statistics literally call a rolling set of households, and I think you're in the pool for 3 months and then you roll off. So every month they add new and drop old, right, if that makes sense. So it's a rolling three-month average. Mm-hmm. And they ask people whether they are looking for work. And that's how they figure out the unemployment rate. Because if you're not actively looking for work, you do not count as employed. And if you are, you don't count as unemployed. And if you are looking for work, but you can't find any, then you're counted in that number. So that's the household survey. There is also the payroll survey where they call companies and say, hey, did you add new jobs in this reporting period? And the reporting period, for those who want to get way down into the weeds, is called the reference week. And what they do is they make these calls during the week of the month that contains the 12th of the month. And that's known as the reference week. And then they spit out the numbers 2 weeks later on the first Friday of the month. So two surveys, household survey, are you looking for work? Payroll survey, did you hire new people? And then they roll that out on the first Friday of the month. And that's how they figure
Dang,
it out.
Dang, you know. A lot of stuff, dude. We should be clear that these numbers could be revised somewhat, apparently. The final number, April's final numbers aren't out till June. They're revised every month in case you want to get even further into the weeds about how these are calculated. But I think the main thing that you're asking is it actually true that no ladies got jobs? And that is not.
Yeah, that is not the fact.
Exactly what we meant. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But now you know.
Now you know.
Smarter.
Okay. Yeah, you're smart. That's right. Next voice memo, Apple and data privacy. And I have a follow-up if I could.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Glenn from Ashland, Oregon. And I'm wondering if you can make me smart about Apple's new privacy controls. This recent update claims to empower iPhone users more abilities to opt out of app tracking. First, can you tell me more? How does it work? And does this have the potential to actually safeguard my privacy? Then, what are the economic impacts to the industry? Thanks.
This is a very interesting question. So the kind of primary way that this works is that you are now, in many cases, opt in instead of opt out. That is, by default, with the latest software update to Apple's iDevices, iPads and iPhones, you will now get a pop-up asking if you want Apple to track your activity across other companies' apps and websites. In the case of apps itself, their ability to track you using the unique advertising identifier that Apple created, by the way, and that is tied to your phone, they won't necessarily be able to access that by default. You would have to opt in. You would have to say to that app, like, oh, okay, sure, go ahead and track me. That sounds great. And that has, of course, caused a lot of app developers to totally freak out because they will, in fact, lose revenue. So now the apps have to send you this notification and get your permission before you can track and share your activity. If you say no, thank you, then this unique identifier, advertising identifier, will be withheld. Apple has also essentially said to developers, like, we also don't want you to use an email address or usage data, you know, where you use your phone and how often, that kind of thing, to track you. Although that's like an honor system with these apps.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's a little unclear whether they're going to follow it. I would assume that they're not, because at this point, so much of the ecosystem is dependent on some kind of tracking. There will be some kind of tracking. However, it is, in some cases, a pretty significant reduction. Facebook is obviously freaking out. Previously, you had to go and specifically turn off this personalized ad thing app by app by app, which was exhausting. It doesn't, however, stop the app itself from collecting data about you. So it just means, like, a third, they can't share it with a third party then. And it depends on, some privacy experts say it depends heavily on whether you actually understand what the pop-up is asking you to do, because we're very used to just clicking yes on things.
Mm-hmm.
It is likely to be, it's likely to be the biggest problem for really Facebook and maybe Google, because these are companies that rely specifically on targeted advertising. So one person told NPR that Facebook could take a 7% revenue hit because of these new revenue control, privacy controls. Experts that I have talked to have said, you know, yeah, this is potentially a pretty big deal. There aren't so many apps that make so much money off of targeted advertising compared to Facebook and Google, but the ones who have made this their specific business model will now have to potentially come up with something different. It doesn't mean you'll never see ads. It just means you won't see personalized ads, and it's harder to attribute your action when you interact with that ad to you specifically.
Is that helpful? Well, everything I know about unemployment, you know about this privacy thing, so
it is pretty, it's kind of fun when you get to see that we actually, like, you know, we have notes, but yes, yeah. It is complicated. It is helpful. It is not a panacea. It doesn't mean there's no tracking. It does not mean that. There is still tracking. There are more limits on what can happen with that data, and sorry, Facebook. Sorry, not sorry.
Here's my follow-up. For consumers who are genuinely concerned about privacy, is this a game changer or is it nibbling around the edges?
It's still nibbling around the edges. I mean, you know, long as targeted advertising and as long as data collection is a revenue stream, it's nibbles. And Apple itself, and this actually concerns me, Apple itself is getting into the advertising business. And one of the reasons that Apple has been so trustworthy on issues of privacy is because it doesn't have a lot of reason to collect data about you. It's not in advertising. And if it is, all of a sudden, even if it's a small, you know, now it's like ads for Apple products on its own app store. But advertising means data, and data is temptation. And
I wonder why Tim Cook is cracking open that particular Pandora's box, right? Because it's not like Apple needs money, and really advertising is only a headache. So
I agree. But I think I have a lot of thoughts about that, but they probably are its own huge podcast.
Yeah, its own separate podcast. Well, we can
diversify, you know, is the short answer.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Yesterday, Kelsey from Los Angeles dialed into the big show, the Tuesday show, about how she's looking forward to going back to the office. Here is part two of that voice memo.
Molly, have you heard about the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser coming out in 2022? So, like, first of all, just take my money, Disney. Second of all, do you think this is the future of travel, especially as VR technologies become more ubiquitous in the future and potential recurring waves of COVID, immersive travel experiences that emulate a locale seem like a trend we might see more. I wonder what other companies besides Disney are investing in it at this scale. Anyway, your show is rad. Thanks for keeping us smart.
I didn't know she was one of my nerds. I didn't know she was one of my people. Molly, I hear you, Kelsey. I'm picking up what you're laying down. And actually, I hadn't, which is even more embarrassing. Thanks to Marissa for giving me the background on it earlier. Okay, so let's explain it. It's an all-immersive vacation experience that will debut in 2022 at Florida's Walt Disney World Resort. You will basically live in Star Wars as you go through this resort.
Wow.
So right now, if you've been to this Star Wars experience at Disneyland, it's kind of like that. And you know how Disneyland is so good at each individual part of the park. Every detail corresponds. Mm-hmm. Like as you're kind of headed toward the Star Wars experience in Disneyland, you see the like trash cans gradually shift from like Frontier Town to sort of like leftover droid parts. And, you know, it's you feel like you are there. And so this is like taking that to the resort level and then presumably integrating a bunch of like VR and AR.
Wow.
And I will say, I mean, one of the cool, I didn't do full disclosure, even though I am a nerd, I did not do the Millennium Falcon ride because those VR rides that are like an immersive experience and also a ride. Oh, Rama ding dong. So no way.
For sure.
But the best thing about that ride is, like, I just went through the hallway with my friends and then I bailed, is that you are basically in the Millennium Falcon before you get on. And so I can see that that's massive appeal. And if you could have a resort that the whole thing is, like, bunks, just like you would have when you were in a Star Cruiser, and you have nothing but money to create that, that's pretty awesome. Is it the future of travel? For some people, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I think we now want to go places is the sense I'm getting.
Absolutely.
Like more people are getting on planes. Yeah, the middle
on a plane.
Seat is full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't want to do VR travel though. I really just don't.
Nope.
They're neat. But I don't know. But AR, like going to a cool resort like this and having AR glasses and having the whole experience of feeling like you're there. Yeah, absolutely. So fun. Okay, finally, I'm going to sneak this one in because just speaking of fun, our next question comes from Will in South Carolina. It's definitely for Kai. He writes, haha,
okay.
Since it's been deemed safe, LOL, to go back to the movies, since most of us are vaccinated, and knowing you are such a huge movie buff, again, LOL, will you see the new Top Gun in a theater?
Interesting. I'm sure I've told this story before, right? I was in flight school in Pensacola when the original Top Gun came out. We all went to see it in our whites in Pensacola in the summertime. And it was, let us just say we had a good time. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, it was great.
Did you lose that love feeling?
So many times. So I've told this story before, right? I spent my early 20s.
It never gets old, I'm sorry.
I spent my early 20s in Pensacola, living on the beach, learning how to fly, and dating a girl who had a water ski boat.
Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Let me tell you, I was insufferable. But anyway. So as not
just
to spoil
like
those
Maverick
memories.
Just like Maverick himself.
Just like Maverick himself, that's right. I'm not going to see Top Gun 2 because I don't want to tarnish the memories. Yeah, no.
Oh, man.
And look, I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan.
I can't get in line.
I'm not. No. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Well, I can't remember if I was on the air or off the air when I talked about how I have a playlist on Spotify for awesome key changes, just songs that have an awesome key change in them.
Yeah. You did. Yeah,
you've done it here. And I embarrassed enough to say that only like 6 months ago did I realize that the Top Gun theme is all one big key change. And I added it to the list. It's my ringtone. I have like a crappy MIDI version of that song as my ringtone. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm getting in line to see that movie in a theater. Maybe I'm just going to save it to be the first one.
Let me know how it is.
So they keep freaking delaying it, which is annoying. It's going to be awesome.
I know.
Just, you know what? Fly up here. Go with me. We'll make a show out of it. We'll record the whole thing.
Hard pass.
It'll be so fun. I am fun. All right. That's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We're going to make this happen. It's going to be amazing. Fundraising. Boom.
Oh, my Lord.
We'll be back tomorrow. keep sending your questions. I will not be back tomorrow. I'm out for the next 2 days on a little vacay. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, send your questions, your emails, your voice memos to makemesmart@marketplace.org.
That's too funny.
We could do it like MST3K. Just like make fun of it from the front row and record it. Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I just don't, I don't have the cultural chops to keep up with you sometimes, Molly Wood. I just don't. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips does our newsletters, also our Make Me Smart explainers. She does those.
Like, you could wear your whites? That would be so awesome. I have a Kelly outfit that I wore to a school auction.
In the garage. They're in the garage.
Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer, and the executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves. I would like to apologize to everyone on the team for all the emails that have now spawned. That's on me. It's on me.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.